Going on, everybody. Welcome to episode 31 of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. My name is Ryan. I am your host. On this podcast, I bring you music reviews from a music lover. Start off this episode with another quote about music. Today's quote is, "Music acts like a magic key to which the most tightly closed heart opens." End of quote. And that is from Maria Augusta von Trapp, who was the stepmother and matriarch of the Trapp family singers. She wrote The Story of the Trapp Family Singers, which was published in 1949, and the story served as the inspiration for the 1956 West German film The Trapp Family, which in turn inspired the Broadway musical The Sound of Music from 1959, and the 1965 film of the same name. That was from Wikipedia, that quote. So, all right, so today I'm going to be reviewing new releases from Arctic Monkeys, Seven Dust, Beach House, and Soft Kill. Before we get into those reviews, I'd just like to mention a couple of records that I think you should check out if you feel inclined to, which I'm not going to review. First one is from a duo called The Body. The album is called I Have Fought Against It, I Can't Any Longer. That's a good one to check out. That features one of my favorite newer artists, Lingua Ignota, on a couple of the tracks. There's also a new album from Simian Mobile Disco. It's called Murmurations. That's a good one to check out. And also there's a new record from the group The Sea and Cake called Any Day. It's another good one, so check that one out. All right, so let's get into today's reviews. First album I'd like to talk about is the new record from the British band Arctic Monkeys. The record is called Tranquility Base, Hotel, and Casino. Where I ponder all the questions, but just manage to miss the mark. Hotel and casino. Mark speaking. Please tell me how may I direct your call. All right, and that was a sample of the title track, Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino. Okay, so Sheffield, England's Arctic Monkeys return with their sixth studio album, Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, the follow-up to 2013's record, AM. Now, I have to confess to not being all that familiar with the Arctic Monkeys before listening to this new record, but on the recommendation of my good buddy Mr. 80 Stone from across the pond, who was a former guest on the podcast as well, I decided to sort of binge listen to the band's studio material, you know, to date, which conveniently only runs about 4 hours, so it wasn't really tough to do. Now, what I found was a band capable of plenty of diversity in their sound and a vocalist slash wordsmith of some considerable prowess in Alex Turner, you know, from the garage punk of their debut record, Whatever People Say I Am, That's What I'm Not, and its energized follow-up, Favorite Worst Nightmare, through, you know, the experiment of the album Humbug, on which the band tapped Queens of the Stone Age frontman Josh Homme to produce, to the 60s rock and Smiths influence record Suck It and See, and even delivering a sort of hip-hop influence record in the record AM. Arctic Monkeys, you know, have sort of deftly woven their way through various sonic landscapes with, you know, Turner always at the helm, presiding over everything with a like a razor sharp wit. And so we arrive at Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, a record that Turner wrote the majority of on a piano, and which the band turned into a dreamy ode to both science fiction and lounge pop, that has polarized fans and critics alike, not surprisingly. Now, as usually happens, I've, you know, fallen somewhere on the, you know, in the middle of this critical spectrum. Now, what the record does best is conjure the atmosphere that its title alludes to, you know, a hotel slash casino built on the site of the 1969 Apollo 11 moon landing. It's a very odd image. The opening track, which is called Star Treatment, just it just saunters out of your stereo or your headphones. You know, the subtle instrumentation just mixing with Turner's David Bowie-esque vocals to create a feeling of comfortable warmth, you know, like slipping into a much-needed bath or something. Now, this modus operandi, you know, runs as a thread through the rest of the record. Musically, Arctic Monkeys, they find a surprising amount of territory to cover within, you know, the parameters of this space lounge aesthetic, you know, with the somewhat pessimistic track One Point Perspective and the reflecting, you know, on societal collapse track American Sports, balancing well against the quirky space noir of the title track and the oddly spooky and somewhat surreal track Golden Trunks. You can even hear lingering traces of the hip-hop influence that was present on AM on a track called 4 Out of 5, and even some humbug-era oddness on a track called Science Fiction. Now, as I mentioned already, Bowie is probably the most apparent influence on Turner's vocals on this record, you know, on the surface, though traces of Leonard Cohen and Nick Cave come through at times, as well as a bit of Jim Morrison on the sort of startling track The World's First Monster Truck Front Flip, on which the band juxtaposed the lounge vibe of the record with some organ that's, like, to me is straight off of a Doors record. Unfortunately, the fact that Turner carries this stylized version of himself with the vocals through to the end of the record, you know, with little variation, keeps Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino from being a great record to me. Now, obviously, channeling a lounge atmosphere doesn't allow for a huge amount of variety in the vocal approach. And what kept me fully engaged throughout my first listen to this record was, you know, Turner's always captivating lyrics. At about 40 minutes long, this record is just the right length for, you know, an album of its kind that doesn't wander too far from a certain path. I certainly won't be pining for, you know, another full record from the band in this mode, but it's nice to know that they have another weapon in their arsenal now. I'm very interested to see if and how they utilize this style on further releases. But for now, you know, I'll find myself coming back to this record, you know, here and there, you know, dissecting Turner's lyrics and finding new subtleties in the musical portrait that they present here. Or I'll probably just go back to listening to Favorite Worst Nightmare, but we'll see what happens. So I gave the record Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino a rating of 7 out of 10. Okay, so moving on to the next record I would like to talk about today. It is the new record from we'll just say Seven Dust because they're always kind of hard to categorize. New record from Seven Dust. The record is called All I See Is War. I just know I'm wrong. I know All right, and that was a sample of the opening track on the album, which is called Dirty. Okay, so Atlanta, Georgia's longtime metal, and I'm putting metal in quotes because, you know, it, like I said, it's hard to classify the band. Even the band members themselves sometimes have trouble trying to categorize their sound. Seven Dust return with their 10th studio album. That's crazy, 10 albums. At this point, these guys have been in the game for over 20 years, and that makes me feel really old, damn it. I was really into this band after their debut record came out in 97, their self-titled debut, and my fascination lasted all the way through the touring cycle for the 2004 record Seasons, and then, you know, my fascination sort of petered out after the release of 2005's record Next. Now, this fading of enthusiasm had little to do with the band's material itself. You know, I simply found myself exploring so many genres and subgenres of various forms of music, you know, that some bands were just kind of bound to fall by the wayside. So, but I checked in on the band here and there throughout, you know, the next 8 or 9 years, usually giving a listen to singles from their new albums, you know, around the time of those albums' release. I was never disappointed by anything I heard, but, you know, none of those tracks that I listened to ever kicked my head in the way that, you know, a song like Black or Too Close to Hate did, you know, songs from their debut. So, you know, years passed and the boys kept plugging away. And after starting up this podcast and, you know, rolling steadily along for, you know, a year and change, you know, a year and 3 or 4 months, I found out that Seven Dust would be releasing a new album soon. Now, spurred on by a couple of my coworkers, you know, shout out to Corey and Robin, I checked out the forthcoming album singles, which were, at that time, it was Dirty and also the track Medicated. I was pleasantly surprised by how energized this band still sounded after, you know, 21 years of playing, and my interest was definitely piqued for All I See Is War. Now, having spun the record about a dozen times since its release, I can say that I'm pretty impressed by the band's longevity and their sustained passion. The most charismatic quality of Seven Dust sound for me has always been frontman LaJon Witherspoon's amazing voice. I mean, even when he was finding his niche early on, you know, which is as evident, you know, it's evidenced in some of the sort of overzealous growled vocals on the band's debut. You know, even when he was trying to find his footing, this guy just had endless melodic tricks up his sleeve, and just an amazing throat, just an amazing voice. And All I See Is War is really another, it's yet another showcase of his talent. Not only does he complement the sort of the rapid fire guitar riffs in Dirty with these soaring and subtle touches, you know, he's also refined his gruff vocals, like those on the second single Medicated and also the satisfying closing track The Truth, so that they sound much more powerful and, you know, less like a nu metal trope. The band is still in good form as well, as their proficiency shows across this record. All I See Is War is filled with, you know, plenty of machine gun riffing, you know, huge walls of power chords, and, you know, the staple ingredient, if you will, of drummer Morgan Rose's screams. This time around, the band, they pulled out quite a few ballads, you know, from under their hat, and, you know, to varying degrees of success. The best of these are, to me, the album's third single, which is called Not Original, and then the penultimate track on the record, which is called Life Deceives You. The album does suffer from a lull at its midpoint, you know, with 2 to 3 mid-tempo tracks that, you know, while not bad songs on their own, tempt me to skip ahead to, you know, more exciting tunes that the album has to offer, like the track Risen. I also prefer a grittier sound quality than Seven Dust went for on this record, but you know, the band's dynamics and Witherspoon's just unstoppable voice make up for that. For me, it boils down to this. You know, some bands make gigantic leaps and bounds in the evolution of their sound in short periods of time, and they occasionally pull it off without alienating their fan base or committing career suicide. Most can't do that. What Seven Dust has done, on the other hand, and this is a tradition that continues with All I See Is War, is refine their approach to this sort of melodic metal slash hard rock in such a way as to maintain their core sound while giving themselves enough freedom, you know, to explore the possibilities of that sound. And, you know, of course, there have been little detours along the way, some successful and some not, but consistency is this band's strongest quality, and that's a rare thing, you know, especially in the fickle world of metal, if you will. Will Seven Dust ever write another album that, you know, blows my circuits in the fashion of, you know, their debut record? Most likely not, but that's okay. I don't expect them to. I'm just glad to see that the boys are, you know, they're still kicking ass after all these years. So, all right. So I gave the record All I See Is War a rating of 7.5 out of 10. Okay, so moving on to the next record that I'd like to talk about today. It is the new record from the dream pop duo Beach House, and the record is called Seven. Okay, so that was a sample of the song Lemon Glow. All right, so Baltimore, Maryland's dream pop duo Beach House, comprised of vocalist slash keyboardist Victoria LeGrand and Alex Saley. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Alex Saley on guitars, keys, and backup vocals, returned with their seventh studio record, the follow-up to 2015's record Thank Your Lucky Stars. Now, last year, the duo released a compilation record, which was called B-Sides and Rarities, and the duo treated this release as a sort of cleaning of the closet, if you will, in preparation for taking a new path in their writing and recording process. Now, for this new record, instead of working with longtime producer Cody Shears, the duo chose to work with a guy named Peter Kemper, who's also known as Sonic Boom, and is formerly of the alternative rock band Spacemen 3. Now, the results are appropriately more extraterrestrial, with the mood being one as much of outer space as inner space, exemplified perfectly on the opening track, which is called Dark Spring, with its giant swells of guitar noise and you know, synths that just conjure images of stars fading and dying, and Victoria LeGrand's abstract lyrics just, you know, reinforcing all of this sort of cosmic imagery. Now, LeGrand is a very clever lyricist, and she uses this image of fading stars in a different sense on another track on the record called Drunk in L.A., the lyrics of which paint the picture of an aging, forgotten Hollywood starlet who's drowning her sorrows in alcohol as she sort of reminisces about the days when she was important. Now, LeGrand has stated in interviews regarding this record that one of its major lyrical themes is the roles that women are, you know, sort of consigned to in a society like ours, a patriarchy which, you know, seems to be dying a slow, stubborn death. And the political landscape of the past couple of years definitely added some fuel to this fire for LeGrand. Now, another major lyrical theme on Seven, as explored on tracks like Pay No Mind, Lemon Glow, which you heard a sample of just now, Black Car, and also a track called Lose Your Smile, is the acceptance of darkness and dark times and the opportunity to find catharsis and even positive outcomes, you know, amidst this darkness. The musical backdrops employed on these songs are strong but subtle, especially on Black Car. One of the best moments on the record for me is just the huge swelling chords in this track called Dive, and how they give way to this sort of this triumphant piece of like mid-tempo power pop that recalls for me the best that the 80s had to offer in this genre. Another nice surprise on 7 is the haunting track called Lay in Canoe, I think I'm pronouncing that right, which translates to the unknown in French, and pertains to the story of a woman who drowned herself in the River Seine in Paris in the late 1800s, and the male worker in the morgue where her body was placed, you know, ended up being so taken by the expression on her face that he made a plaster of it, and this so-called death mask actually became a popular decoration in the city for quite a while afterward. Legrand, she very deftly uses this track to, you know, interweave the strongest themes of the record, and the track's ghostly production makes it one of the most captivating songs that the duo offer up to listeners on 7. Legrand also uses the last two songs on the record, a track called Girl of the Year and the last track, which is called Last Ride, to explore female societal roles, fame, and darkness. Again, Girl of the Year explores the tragic stardom of Edie Sedgwick, who was one of Andy Warhol's, you know, so-called superstars, and who led a deeply troubled life, you know, despite and perhaps because of, you know, her constant exposure to the public eye. Sedgwick's tragic story of, you know, female objectification is summed up quite succinctly when Legrand sings, "Get dressed to undress, depressed to impress, all night long." Now, the closing track, Last Ride, is inspired by the infamous death in a bicycle accident of the female singer, actress, and model Nico, who was another one of Warhol's superstars and famous for working with the Velvet Underground. She died at 49 years of age. Now, you know, she was another deeply troubled female star, who, you know, exemplified the unhealthy and corrosive manner in which women were idolized in the 60s and beyond. Legrand again shows her cleverness by tying the album's themes together into a neat package, using Nico's last quote-unquote cycle ride as a means of sort of taking the record's themes of dying stars and beauty and darkness for one final spin. So 7 thematically is stunning, haunting, and very clever. Lyrically, it can be both acute and obtuse in conveying its themes, and is for the majority of the record successful. Musically, the record is one of transition for Beach House. So, you know, while it's nowhere near perfect, it seems to portend great things to come, you know, from a duo who have already proven time and time again to be capable songwriters. 7 is refreshing in its best moments, you know, sort of like diving into cool water. And, you know, if Beach House can keep this up, I think that their next record could be a major achievement for them. So I gave the record 7 a rating of 8 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the last record I'd like to talk about today, and my personal pick for this episode. It is the new record from post-punk band Soft Kill, and the record is called Savior. We'll be right back. that was a sample of the song Dancing on Glass. So the events in the life of Tobias Sinclair, also known as Tobias Grave, vocalist and guitarist for the post-punk band Softkill, you know, leading up to the creation, production, and release of the band's fifth studio album, Savior, you know, were harrowing in a manner that, you know, tends to lead to the creation of great pieces of art. You know, a former criminal, veteran of prison, and addicted to, at different times, to both heroin and meth, you know, Grave certainly had plenty of source material to draw inspiration from, you know, with the band's past records, but the single most terrifying and difficult experience of his life awaited him, you know, just after he had kicked his meth addiction to the curb. Tobias Grave's wife, Nicole, had come out with the band for the last few dates of a tour, and while the band were heading through a town in Southern California called Lost Hills, the expectant mother, you know, she began to bleed out, and Grave rushed her to the UC Davis Trauma Ward in Sacramento, where the couple's son, Dominic, was delivered via C-section and immediately rushed to the neonatal intensive care unit due to not being able to breathe on his own. A day later, as the couple were watching him in the NICU, the baby flatlined and was ultimately revived by the ward staff. Now, while Graves' wife and son recovered in the hospital, Grave, you know, fearing a relapse into his drug addiction with no outlet, you know, for the mountain of emotions that he felt during this terrifying time, spent his time away from the hospital in a hotel room with a guitar and a basic gear setup, you know, writing the most emotionally visceral, bare material of his career. Ultimately, both his wife and his son recovered, and Dominic is a healthy toddler now, you know, but the oral document of Graves' experience, you know, which is this album, Savior, stands really as the strongest album of Softkill's career. You know, while the trademark gloomy post-punk of the band's previous records can be found throughout Savior, especially on tracks like Bunny Room and also a track called Trying Not to Die, this time around, Graves' songs come with some surprises, like the bright chords that open the album on the track Swaddle, you know, conveying the sense of joy that one feels at the birth of a child, and seeming, you know, somewhat out of left field for a Softkill record. And then the dive into darkness, you know, after this track makes complete sense thematically and, you know, creates a palpable sense of surreality on Savior. The album's final track, which is called Hard Candy, also opens with a surprise, you know, in a snarling, distorted guitar that drops away and then, you know, returns as the song comes to a close. Now, one of the issues that I had with the band's last album, a record called Choke from 2016, was the drowned out quality of Graves' vocals. You know, they were pushed down too far into the mix for me, you know, and that made it tough to understand the lyrics much of the time. This time around, I think the production is perfect, you know, with the raw, naked emotion of the lyrics, impossible to miss even when, you know, vocal effects add a layer of ghostly echo to Graves' voice, as on the track Missing. You know, the music and vocals still feel like a symbiotic relationship, as on the band's previous work, but this time around, Graves' vocals carry as much weight as the instrumentation does. You know, I hope very, very much that this successful evolution of the band's sound inspires Grave and company to keep pushing the envelope and experimenting with their sound, because Savior makes it very apparent that they're capable of, you know, breaking free from post-punk cliches and tropes that, you know, hold so many other bands back. I would never, ever wish the awful situation that Tobias Grave and his family endured on anybody, especially as being a father myself, you know, but the resultant piece of art, this album Savior, is a very, very important addition to the band's catalog and also to the genre of post-punk itself. I gave the record Savior a rating of 8.5 out of 10. All right, and that concludes my reviews for today. Make sure anybody who's listening to the podcast who hasn't joined the Radio Live Transmission Facebook community, please do so. Get on Facebook and search for us. Just search Radio Live Transmission, just the way that it appears in the podcast title, and you will find us. And get on there, everybody. Start posting. A lot of cool people on there. So, and please catch up with me next time around for episode 32, on which I will be reviewing new releases from Photocrime, Ash, TT, which is a side project of, or I should say a solo record from Teresa Wayman of the band Warpaint, and also Ray LaMontagne. Thank you again, everybody, for listening. This is Ryan for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. Have a good night.